Hello. Welcome to this afternoon with our talks and lectures. We do it in English, of course. I guess that's the thing we do it now in Berlin. Always people from everywhere here. Yeah, so you have the program in your hands, I guess. We will start the afternoon with Gamut Inc. So Marian Wörle and Maciej Sledzecki. I was learning this name again today. Still, but it was correct. So, yeah, Gamut Inc., if you've been here yesterday, you saw them perform and you saw that they're not only composers and musicians, but also instrument builders. And that's really a kind of intrinsic, integral part of their practice. And besides music performances, as we could witness yesterday, they also engage in a range of different projects, from musical theater to radio art pieces, and also to curatorial works. And most of what they do is kind of related to a research into kind of the history of music and musical concepts, and also in the history of music machines, so a kind of media archaeological approach. And today they will talk a bit about this background of their work. And yeah, let's have them tell what they do. Thank you.
Thanks for the nice introduction. That means that we can skip already this. And my name is Marion. I'm a laptop player and graphic designer. I studied architecture. And my first instrument was the piano, and my first steps in performing I did with a bunch of electronic devices like drum computers and synthesizers.
Hi, I'm Maciej Sledzecki. I'm guitarist and composer, and we're making together music for the last 12 years in different fields, as Jan mentioned before. And we got into this sound archaeologic research during a commission that we got for a composition for the grand organ at the St. Peter Church in Cologne, which is a very specific organ. You can see this is like the half of the pipes of the organ. There is another set on the other side of the church. It's kind of a stereo effect that you get from this organ, and it has very specific features. For example, it's made of pipes from different centuries, from like really old Renaissance organ, but also it has registers or sounds that were used in cinema organs in the 20s, like a Wurlitzer like you have here in the Babylon. It has very specific pipes that the person who designed this organ especially made for this organ to be able to perform modern music on it. And what was very important for this project was it has a MIDI interface. So you can just go with your laptop there, plug in, and you can play the whole organ, which every register, which every sound from the computer, and you can change the sounds very quickly like no organ player could do. And what we did there was like connecting this wonderful instrument with this installation that was there. So there was an installation from a Belgian architects. All these squares could move and rotate, and we translated the movements of this installation into the sounds of the organ. And during doing this, it struck us very hard that there's such a strong connection between an organ and a synthesizer, and that it's really worth to explore it. What we found there is also was an person, the Gerhard Kern, who is an instrument builder, and that was like the start of our going into the machine work. So Gerhard was working with punch card instruments that you probably know from barrel organs. And he built huge instruments that he then started to modernize in a way that instead of using punch cards, he started to using a MIDI interface too, so you can control it completely from a computer.
Yes, and so we went deeper into the history of music machines and experimental music in 2013 with the project Avant-Avantgarde. We did this with a friend of us, Michał Libera. He is located in Warsaw. And the project we did with about 50 musicians in four cities, in Cologne, Berlin, Warsaw, and Krakow. And we were going back to the roots of experimental music. And one thing was also like the demystification of the myth of the like the new music and contemporary music of the 20th century. And we discovered a lot of phenomena that were rooted much more deeper in history than expected. And our aim for this project was like to create and to build a music machine for each event, but it was very, then it turned out that it was much more challenging, and we ended up at least with three instruments that we built over the course of the whole project. And this was also like the start of our ensemble Gamund Inc. And these are the first two instruments we built. On the left side, it's called Carillon, and on the right side, the first version of the Bojo. And we will talk about this in detail later. This was one performance at Berghain. It was dedicated to the phenomena of Giuseppe Tartini. It's about the combination tones. We will also talk about this a little bit more later. And this was our setup in 2013 with the music machines. In the end, the Polish magazine Glissando dedicated what was really very nice an issue to the theme and to all the things we discovered over the course, because we couldn't present all these theories on stage within like the performances. And we thought like, wow, there's all this material and all this knowledge. And we wanted to let at least know a few people more about it. And I mean, at least the magazine is there and we could collect a lot of our thoughts.
And what we found out, or what maybe you can cook it down to, that there are two ways to see the history of automation of music, and they relate to two aspects of music. It's like one is the automation of sound itself, and one is the automation, like you have modern the automation is the loudspeaker, or you have the automation of the composition process itself, which is represented by algorithmic composition. And we're going to give you a brief history about the automation of music. So when we think of this, as I mentioned before, you think of this barrel organs that you see at fairs. But the history is much deeper. Actually, it goes back to ancient Greek. And what you see here in this picture is are moving doors that the ancient Greek had, and they had this hidden apparatus below temples. There is this fireplace that generates steam that moves a chain, and the chain can then open and close like magically the temple doors. And they had it already like 100 before Christ, as Heron von Alexandria describes in his Automata book. They had actually a lot of kinetic sculptures like that. For example, flute players that could perform melodies, or birds, or statues that could move an arm or something like this. And this is it was seen a little bit as a kitsch by the higher classes, you know, to use this technology for art. And therefore, it's someday it also disappeared again. But we'll come back to this later. What we also found really interesting were predecessors to field recordings, concrete music, or also to sound effects. What you see here is a rain machine. These machines came up in the Baroque theaters, and they were hidden behind the stage also, like the the temple door mechanism that you've seen before, either below the stage or some behind a curtain. And they could create a huge amount of different sounds like wind, rain, thunder. It was a whole arsenal of sound effects that could be used to create the illusion of being actually on a ship or whatever.
One guy we also discovered, he accompanied us for a longer term. He's called Athanasius Kircher. It's a 17th century polymath. And so we want to show you only one thing of his various collection of ideas and apparatus. It's called the Arca Musa Rhythmica. And you can call it most probably the first algorithmic composition machine. And it's a wooden box filled with cue cards. And you can combine four-part canonic pieces with it. So, and there are written down also specific moods and timbres, and it's kind of similar to the idea of a loop library. And between the 17th and the 20th century, it was really like a boom of building music machines. So there are only a few we will show you. It's for example, this flute clock for which Mozart and Beethoven did compositions. And the bigger one, which I think is more famous, it's the orchestrion. It's like big wooden cupboards filled with a whole ensemble of instruments. And there's a smaller version of an orchestrion. And then the most famous one is the pianola, also known as the player piano. And the player piano is the instrument which is already still existing now. And Conlan Nancarrow, for example, he did a lot of his complex compositions for punch card pianolas, for example. And with the newer edition of the player pianos, you can also record like the mood of playing. So you can not only play back like the notes, but also like, for example, Glenn Gould played his piece. Yes, now we step back much deeper again into history.
Yeah, obviously, all these inventions kind of became obsolete with the invention of the loudspeaker, where you could recreate whole orchestras in your living room. So they kind of disappeared and just stayed as a kind of a obscurities, except this player piano that Mario mentioned. And if we go back now again and think about the history of sound design more than history of automation, one figure that is at the beginning of the history that we know is Pythagoras, who you can see here at this monochord instrument. It's actually it's a polychord because it has many strings, but originally it's an instrument that is just a wooden box with a string on it, and it was both an instrument for physical measuring and an instrument for musical creation. So what he does here is he divides the string by a number of two or number of three or number of or four or a higher number, and he developed a whole theory around this divisions of the string that for him related to the movement of the planets or the whole universe, and the simpler the number was, in his opinion, the more harmonic it was. So basically what he discovered here is the theory of the overtones that we still use and that you still find when you play a guitar or flageolets or whatever. And so this is a very important figure for all kinds of sound research thing. But also it is said that he was not the first one who discovered it, but he got this knowledge from some ancient Egyptian priests. So this knowledge of divisions of a string or of frequency seems to be like very, very old in human history. And we're going to make a huge jump now to the 18th century, with a very important figure who is Chladni. He was a German physicist and musician who was probably the first one to visualize sound waves. And he did so by putting sand on very thin plates of metal or of glass and striking them with a bow. What you can see here is a pattern occurs when he strikes the plate, and the pattern is related to also the overtone of the plate that is resonating. So the plate can resonate either in its own frequency, like you probably know that each body has its own resonant frequency, but the pattern changes depending on where you, similar to like dividing a string, you can kind of divide the plate by touching it at one point, and then you get overtone resonances of this plate. And so you get like very fantastic patterns out of this, which he found out. And here you can see different patterns for different overtone structures that occur. And they're always the same. It doesn't matter how big the plate is. So it's something very intrinsic to frequency. And he became really famous with this visualization, with this show. Yeah, it was basically a show. He would play for Napoleon Bonaparte and travel through whole Europe and became like the first multimedia artist, maybe. Yeah. Another very important figure for the history of sound is Helmholtz, who is also 19th century physicians, and he was doing a lot of experiments, for example, with tuning forks. So he would take a tuning fork, which was the purest sound that he could find at his time, because he was obsessed of like getting the sound to its very core, like very radical idea of that the sound is combined of waves that are like sine waves. So he was the kind of the one who proved it right, that it's possible to separate each sound into its own elements, which are the sine waves. And he did so by having this tuning forks tuned in different frequencies and striking them not with a like you would hit a tuning fork against a table or whatever, but he would use electromagnets, which were a very hot thing at his time. And by doing so the electromagnets get the tuning fork to vibrate, you don't get an attack on this tuning fork, so you get a very clear note that is that has no attack. And he wanted to synthesize the vowels of the human speech with his tuning forks, which he succeeded almost completely, except the I. The I has too much of dissonant resonances to be synthesized, but you can say that he created the first synthesizer, which was not used for music but for physical research, but it's a very basic research that he did for this.
So I think the next is Giuseppe Tartini, the Italian violin player, composer, and music theorist. So he was the one who discovered the combination tones. They are also called Tartini tones. And it's a phenomena that the ear like works like kind of a transducer. So if a violin player plays a double stop, so you can not only hear the tones which are actually be played or performed, there is a additional frequency that you hear. And Tartini discovered this, and he did a lot of compositions and violin concerts about this phenomena. And there is also one story about his most famous piece, the devil's trill sonata, that he had a dream and the devil on the bed was on his bed was playing the violin, and he heard like a composition from the devil, and he woke up and immediately started to work on the composition, but he said himself it was his best composition he ever did, but it was not as good as the piece he could hear in his dream played by the devil. So from Tartini to some discoveries in this is one picture done about the situation. This is an instrument, it's a Vietnamese instrument, it's called Kni. And it's a string instrument, and it sounds like this talk box effect. So the player modulates a resonant box attached to the string.
It's very interesting that like in folklore music, you find a lot of sound effects and modulations that you would not find in like classical music or so. So this is
Then this is an old woman rotating a pan. She's obviously from Bosnia and Herzegovina, and the technique is called tepsijanje. And it happened that it's a rural tradition only practiced by women. And one woman was rotating like a specific pan in a specific size. And another woman was like singing into this pan. And then there was like this vibrato effect. And you can see this like kind of a predecessor of what Stockhausen did with his rotating table. In the end, it's the same idea. And it's also like the same effect like you can find in the Leslie speaker, which was invented in the 40s, I think, by Don Leslie in the United States. So let's turn now to the organ again, I think. Okay. This is one more picture of how the Leslie speaker can be built of these speakers which are rotating. And
okay, so I said before that the invention of the loudspeaker kind of made all this automata obsolete, but which is not completely true, because they stayed some of these inventions and these ideas of how to produce a sound, for example, in the organ, which was called the queen of the instruments, and which is many knowledge kind of came into this organ. It's a I want to kind of... So you explain in which way it relates to electronic music for me. It's like in electronic music, each organ is a very different animal. It's a very specific instrument that is built by people who have a specific idea of how the sound should sound like. It's like in electronic music, where you have this highly individualized setups of everybody, where we say, okay, it's a laptop concert, but in fact what we hear is produced by a very individual software that somebody created or that somebody put together in the for the means that he wants to reach with his music. And it's similar with the organs, also with the pipes that are made. In different periods of organ, there are pipes that are made for the organ to sound more homogeneous, so you can melt all these single pipes, like in a synthesizer, to one huge organ sound. But there are different periods in organ building where you had more idea of like split tone sound. So all the registers could not actually be played at the same time and sound like one thing, but there would be like different instruments that collide. And So all this customization, individualization, the synthesis is something that is, and also, of course, what you saw, I think, in the picture before, or you can also see here, this elaborate control mechanisms that that is built, like all these controllers and all this, you can see that the human way of playing the organ is tried to bring to its max. You know, it's you have all these registers and all the manuals that obviously not one player can play, but you can put different sounds on each of these keyboards and have different effects by doing so. You can also, there are in most of the or many of the organs are also not only pipes but also like percussion instruments, like mallet instruments, like bells, or even song birds sounds. So you have a variety of sounds that you can approach with this instrument.
I think in this point we start to explain a bit about the instruments we build. So this is our newest instrument. We call it Specht. It's the German word for woodpecker. It has some predecessors while we are building instruments, and this is how it looks in reality. There are 8 metal bars, and you can hit them with solenoids and in 2 different modes. So you can hit them with the iron pin or with the other magnet. To hit the same metal bar is prepared with a piece of felt, so it sounds more dumb, and the other magnet, if it hits the metal bar, it sounds really harsh and clear. It's the instrument we started the concert yesterday for those people who have been here. And it's the first instrument we developed in the thinking of modules. So we built 2 meanwhile. And we are really happy with this. This was one of the predecessors of this instrument. So you can also see it's much smaller, it's much easier to carry and to be on the road with. This was the second predecessor, so it was smaller than this, but still big and a bit sloppy while playing it. And we wanted it to hit the metal bars much faster, and so we put all our wishes into the new instrument. But this one exists not and doesn't exist anymore. These are pictures of the old version, but we don't have this anymore. This is the fisharmonika, so you can tell
about this. Yeah, this is the fisharmonika. This is an accordion-like instrument that we also don't have anymore. What you saw yesterday is like the next edition, kind of. This was made on different levels, which were also not working properly, so it had to be rebuilt completely, which you can see in the next picture, I think, or?
See the wind machine.
Okay, but there you can see, like, so there's a wind machine, like a compressor that generates, like, air that, like, an accordion player would, like, move his arms, and that gives the air to the accordion. Okay, and this is the new version. What you see here is like this box that gets all the air, and there are 2 wind chambers. Let's start from the outside. There are like all these red things you can see are solenoids or magnets that can open or close a valve. So you get one tone from like an accordion player would press a button, but. There is much more that is inside of this instrument, which is what makes it, I mean, maybe talking about this, pressing the buttons, what is interesting about this instrument is it can play really, really fast, like so fast as no human can play, obviously. Actually, it can get so fast that the wind is becoming like a steady tone. So you can have, like in electronic music, you have these transitions between stable tone and rhythmic impulse, which you can emulate quite well in an analog way with this instrument, which is what we are after also. And besides having all this abilities to play notes. It has six motors built inside that can change the way the wind flows inside in the instrument. There are two wind chambers, and each wind chamber is has its own motor that is kind of can reduce or it can basically reduce the wind flow into this chamber. So there is the left, you see the bass, and the right, you see the treble and mid registers that can be triggered. And what you see here also quite good is are there metal bars or brass bars. They are triggering, there are six motors from the other side of the instrument that are triggering this, or that they're controlling this. And it's like, if you know accordion a little bit, you have knobs that are special knobs that change the sound of the instrument, that are like, you can access a higher octave or a lower octave, the registers or the stops, which change the sound of the instrument dramatically. And this is like one of the things that we ask Gerhard to do, is to make these stops that you have in an accordion continuously. So you can not only change from the turn on or off the sound, but you can actually get the sound in a continuous way, like you would use an electronic filter to filter in more bass or more treble. This is like the connection that you can achieve with the mixture of this old technology and the computer controls. Yes, there you can see some more of the details of the motors inside.
This is the next instrument. We call it bojo. It's a compound word of banjo and ebo. It has also a predecessor. We can show you this soon. And it's electromagnets that drive the strings, the ebos, in the middle of the construction. And then there are stepper motors, and they move bottlenecks along the string to get the different tunes out of the string. And I don't know if it's so easy to discover, but there are also two motors on the right and on the left side, and there are some plectras attached, and you can hit the strings, so we can also get rhythmic patterns out of the instrument. The predecessor of this instrument, it looked like this. There you can see better the starting point, because the original idea was starting from the monochord. And there we had this big wooden box with three pairs of strings and wagon-like things moving over the strings to get the different pitches out of it. And but this one works much better, and it amplifies the sound also much better, and is capable of a lot of more functions. And this is also a very new instrument in our collection. So you want?
It's obviously a drum that has four beaters on different spots, so you get a different attack on each of the spots. And in the center, you have a special solenoid that can also continuously change its strength, so you can change the pitch of the drum's membrane. So you get on a tuned
pauke,
timpani.
Yes, thank you. On a tuned timpani, you can change the pitch, so it's a little bit similar here. And obviously, it can also go very, very fast, and which is one of the things that we're looking for when we use this technology. It's you can go either very fast or you can go also very slow. These are two ways that the machines are capable of doing. You can you can make very precise rhythms that are so slow that non-drummer could really get into this slow thing. But also, like, you can get so fast that it's like a hyper drum roll that almost becomes to this point where your ear is not dividing different tones, but it's kind of melts into a single pitch. You can almost get there, and maybe if we improve it a little bit, you can really get there and make like this also this transition from pitch to rhythmic impulse.
The last one are these three kabazas driven by stepper motors, so they can rotate or they can also play via MIDI notes, like rhythmic patterns, and it's the idea is like to build a noise generator with these things. So they work really very well. So this is it about the music machines we built until now. And from the technical side, the whole system is driven by Ableton Live with Max4Life, where we write our own like controllers, and all the instruments are MIDI driven.
And the interesting thing about this for us is like the connection between the old and the new, it really meets in this place where you have like digital control of acoustic instruments that are mechanically driven and then led back through microphones to Marion's computer where she treats them again. So you have like a whole cycle of technology that goes around it. And I mentioned before, this thing of pitch becomes rhythmic impulse, so the continuity between two states, and one continuity is also like continuity between electronic music and acoustic music, which you can see quite well in these instruments, for example, in a that there are not two worlds, but it's just one world that is that has a continuum between them. For example, if you think about this bojo that we showed you before, it's a string that is driven by an electromagnet that is driven by electricity, and then it drives the air that goes into your ear. And it's basically the same principle as a loudspeaker, who is a membrane that is driven by electromagnet that is driven by electricity. So it's basically almost the same principle, but you would not say that it's necessarily electronic music, since it's a string that vibrates, that makes the resonance on the body of an acoustic machine. So it's is it this one or is it this one? You really cannot decide very clearly, which I find very interesting to get into these fields between these two worlds.
Mm. I think we come to the last chapter of this lecture today. The theme of the melding of human and technology, this accompanies us for quite some years. And last year we did a music theater about human and technology. It was loosely based on a short story written by David Foster Wallace. To open this with two hands. So, and it was about human and technology. And so the music machines formed like a technic totem. So it was like the picture itself like presented this melding of the old and the new. And one performer was like rotating around this totem pole and like being overwhelmed by technology. And we were like controlling the whole system like from the outside of the triangle we built on stage. So what else do we have? This is kind of the end. What we could mention are some projects that are going to happen soon, or
maybe one last word about the old and the new. That it's like the interesting thing about a seemingly outdated technology like this music machines. The interesting thing about it is that the old technology comes back sometimes, but it has different forms. Like if you think about windmills that were really like died out, and then came back as to produce power, and or if you think about if you think about this moving doors that the Greeks had in this ancient Greek times, the technology that they used is very similar to what is a steam machine that was used then almost 2,000 years later to drive the whole industrial revolution. But they just kind of did not see the potential in the technology that they had at the time. So sometimes things come back and create something completely different than it was before. Maybe if you're interested in this topic more, in September we're gonna make a three-day festival about robot music and instrumental music, where we will invite ensembles from all over to present their work and composers to write new pieces for it. So, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Where will this festival be, actually?
It will be in the Musikbrauerei.
Here
in Berlin. Not Kulturbrauerei, but Musikbrauerei in Berlin.
Okay. So we still have a bit of time. If there's any questions, I have a microphone here. Feel free to ask and raise your hand. And otherwise, we're having a short intermission until 7, when Andrei Smirnov will talk about the Rhythmicon. So there's a question. I run. Wait, because we're having an audio stream and so on, so use the microphone.
Yes, I just wanted to ask, for the machine you build that were like prototypes, why don't you keep them, or like, why you reuse some parts of it, or?
I mean, we need all the elements in the machine to build the new one. So okay. Some are also not so cheap, and you need a lot of space, like to keep all the ideas. And we didn't show all the machines we're working on. So there were also a lot of machines like. So we ended like the process of building because we thought like it's not so efficient musical wise, or it's too much effort to really get them running like we want to, because there are no predecessors of the machines. So the many ideas turn out to be not so good as they seem to be. And if we have the feeling like the machine is not good enough, so it's really like a shift, like a change. So we take the material we have as good as it works.
Okay.
Also, you sometimes don't want to see the machines that don't work so good anymore.
Yeah, because I was also thinking, because definitely Ableton or whatever computer-based composing thing allows you to create patterns that are like very precise, very demanding for physical structures that should then vibrate and produce sound. And at some point, for example, like the drum, if you hit it like super, super fast, at one point as well, just the momentum of or the momentum of a plate or something, then is limiting the response of the structure. So if you had like also several versions of them, then you could decompose more complex and more advanced patterns into several physical structures that would be able to respond to what you asked. Like maybe like do additive synthesis into like different of them to create something that couldn't be like physically possible for one physical structure.
Did I get it right that you mean that we could keep the machines and to send like a question to the machine and to get like different states and levels of answers due to their technical state? No.
I think
this would be also interesting, but
No, I think he meant like you have one drum that can be hit at some certain frequency, and if you have two, then you can have like a double frequency, you know, and can kind of split this thing. Yeah. But one thing of building machines and having them is like you really want to travel with them, you want to play with them, you know. And we are two people, and you know, the heavier all the stuff gets because it's a physical structure, the less you can travel basically, and or need a cargo or whatever, you know. So it's we try to keep it also small at the moment.
Since we build machines, they are getting always smaller and lighter. This is like an important aspect meanwhile.
So there was another question over there. Running.
Yes, as a media archaeology of sound production, I'm absolutely fascinated by your performance and your machines. But I had 24 hours to think why I felt still uneasy after your brilliant presentation in the concert yesterday, and I can now express why. Aren't you, maybe one calls it post-digital, this hybrid combinations of computer and analog or electroacoustic machines now, aren't we as an audience even more betrayed than by pure algorithmic music? Because the role of the computer, who is controlling, filtering, manipulating the algorithmic part of it, it's hidden even more. You dissimulate it. It looks so fantastically, the appeal of the real, the materiality, and you say it can break down and there is the damage. But it's the algorithm which controls it. And so it's the power of the algorithm even absorbs the analog world more than ever. As long as the electroacoustic machines is separate from the algorithm, one can clearly distinguish the real, the materiality, the noise, the random element. But it's all controlled. It's a media interface. And so I'm a bit suspicious about what it looks like. Our nostalgia for haptic touch and material, physical acoustics is fully satisfied, but the algorithm dissimulates even more. So I'm a bit sort of politically or critically feel uneasy about it, but we are probably aware of it, about it, and you play with it.
Maybe. I think we're guilty, you're right. Yeah, in a way, it's all there. Yeah, there is nostalgia, and there is this thing about like the algorithms intruding even more the physical world, and it's like something that is happening everywhere at the moment, I guess. Mm-hmm. No, I mean it's the membrane is becoming so thin between these two worlds, and yes, there is no critical response from our side in this project. You're right.
Yeah, okay, so I think we leave it at that. Thank you very much, Marion, and so thank you very much, Gammerding, and we have a short break, and then welcome Andres Smirnov. Thank you.